Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Welcome back to another episode of the War Stories Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Fletch Fletcher. I'm a retired cop and the king of useless information. With me today, as always, my co-host, Zohan.
Hello.
Shalom.
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 Shalom in the home. That was such a dumb show.
I actually I know the prop master who did the Zohan movie.
Oh, really?
And I asked him, like, do you have a bottle of fizzy bubblech left over?
That we could just take a picture with when we're doing the podcast?
No, I don't want it. I want to keep it. I got a guy I want to give it to. So he's actually going to go look and see if he has any fizzy bubblech left to get you. And we're here in Casa de Salty with the Salty operator. What's going on?
Yes. How are you?
I'm well. I'm glad to be back from last episode 5 minutes ago.
It's been that long?
Right. Well, that's why I was telling the listeners, they don't understand. We sit down because we try and record, you know, three or four at a time. And, you know, that way we have our real lives, don't have to get that interrupted. So it's difficult to get us all together. So if you hear sometimes we're like, we have a guest returning, and then you haven't heard them before.
Meaning he hasn't left.
And you're like, wait, we didn't hear that guest. And then the next week you hear it, it's because we released it out of order.
Right.
And then gracing us with her insights and opinions, Mrs. Operator, hello.
Good afternoon.
We appreciate you joining us as always and giving us, you offer us some unique insights oftentimes that we don't even, like I
you don't even want to talk about.
No, I don't even consider it. Like you say, I think it's this. And I'm like, oh yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate
it. Welcome to my world.
Right. She blows your mind on a daily basis and
multiple times.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And sitting back in from a previous episode that may or may not have aired yet, depending on what order releases, is Robert, who's a cop from a SoCal agency. Thanks
Howdy.
For sticking around.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure.
I appreciate it. We always like, you know, different voices and different opinions because everybody sees it. We always knew this, but then we've really learned that everybody sees it from such a different perspective when we tell these stories. And everybody seemed to catch a different detail or notice a different thing. So I appreciate you sticking around.
New voices are fresh.
Also. And new voices. You know,
they're fresh for the listeners.
So for this episode, Zohan has agreed to share another story, but this time, because you've already shared a police story with us.
Right.
But this is going to be from your time in the military.
Sure.
And for the listeners, Zohan wasn't always a cop before that. You were 101st Airborne.
So I was.
You want to give out your bona fides and from the Army and
sure.
Explain to people where you're at?
Yeah. In 2007, I enlisted in the Army, and I was assigned to the 101st Airborne Division out of Fort Campbell, 2506 Infantry Regiment. And Curry. So for all of you that have seen Band of Brothers, that was the unit I was in.
Yes.
Just obviously in a different time because I'm not
75 years
yeah,
later.
A few years later.
So there's a lot of history to the unit
I was
in.
They don't care. You were that's the unit you were in.
That was the unit I was in. Yeah. So
Was. Because is it even around anymore?
Oh yeah, Curry is not around anymore.
What?
Yeah, that unit was disbanded. I mean, side note, I got a chance to go back to Kentucky about a year ago, whatever it was. And I went to the old post and I asked a few of the soldiers about it. I'm like, hey, I forgot what we used to call it, but they're like, oh yeah, it's not around anymore, but there is a memorial.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, that's lame. I'm like, there's so much history here. How could they do that?
It's like, some units should just live in perpetuity.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Like, the Navy's got to have a skull squadron or the Jolly Roger squadron at all times, even if the planes change. Come on.
Sure. So the memorial is nice, but yeah, they're not around anymore. So I'm happy I got to be a part of that, during the war. So So yeah, so I went to the military in 2007, went to Fort Benning, Georgia.
Completely peaceful time, nothing going on whatsoever.
Right. 2007. Peaceful.
Aloha snack bar.
That's yeah. Right. You know, in the war, you know, and about this time, the war, it's raging. So they are, you know, they were offering bonuses for any type of combat MOS you wanted to get in. So I think I got like a $20,000 signing bonus.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah. You know, just to enlist, basically saying, yep, I know I'm going, so let's just go. So
yeah, let's just get this out of the way. You're going to the shit. So here's 20 grand.
Right. So
wait, now, and how did you, Salty, feel about like him saying,
oh, wait. Let's talk about how Salty did everything he could to join any branch of the military to go to that war. But he was too old. They wouldn't take him, including the Coast Guard.
Even though I said I would sign, and there's a way to do it. I think it's not what you know, but who you know.
Right.
I even said that I'll sign whatever medical waivers because I guarantee I'll kick half the guy's asses in boot camp.
And I guarantee you would too.
And they said no.
Wow. Now, was it just you wanted to do it on your own or you wanted to do it because your son was...
Combination.
Home? Okay.
I guess. Combination.
But how did you... So you felt like, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was all in.
Okay. All right. Okay. So signed, you got your 20 grand.
Even had a talk with Blackwater.
Oh, really?
I'm like, okay, you don't want me this way, you're going to get me this way. Right?
And but, that didn't...
Yeah, the timing was bad because of where I was working and a leave of absence, and one would be covered and one wouldn't.
Right.
So it just wasn't smart.
So you, 2007, you know you're going.
Yeah, I go.
Does that change, like, just curious, does that change your perception, or like when you go to basic and you go to your A school and you get your MOS and all that stuff, knowing that when you're done with all that, off you go. Like, did was that on your mind at all, or was it just
no,
it is what it is?
It didn't hit me. I don't think it hit me until, you know, obviously there's a portion that hit me when I get off the plane in Afghanistan. I'm looking around going like, this shit's fucking real. Like, this is a real place, right. You know? And then it's another thing when you're getting shot at,
right.
You know, so okay. There's different stages to this.
Sure.
But, you know, so I get to Fort Benning, Georgia. I go through my basic training, and infantry training is basic training. So it's one long training. So every other job in the military, you have basic, and then you go to a school, whatever that is. I forgot. I think it's called OSIT for infantry. I'm not exactly sure. But anyways, one long thing. And I'll never forget. I think it was one of my last days in, before we had graduated. I remember Salty old drill sergeant that I'd seen fuck up people. I'd seen him headbutt people with his freaking hat and split him open. And I just remember it, like, there was a calm thing that he had, or like I don't know how to explain it. It's just almost like you had to hear it. But I remember him saying, you know, hey, just remember the guy to the left or to the right of you, you're not going to, you know, they're not going to be alive, you know, in about a year or two.
Just like that.
Just like, I mean, just something like super like dark and like super like, wow. I mean, that's kind of crazy. And at the time, you know, I had met a guy named Paul and a guy named Jason. And immediately we kind of just hit it off. So it was us three in basic, you know, they were really good friends.
Three amigos.
Yeah. And we all happened to go to the same unit. Different companies, but same unit.
Now, for the people that have never been in the military, what does that mean as far as staying together?
All,
the difference between being in the same company but not being in the same unit, how does that work?
So it's broken up into, so you have your, you know, so Curry had first and second battalion. And within battalion, well, you have a regiment, which is everybody, including the infantry, and then you have the infantry, and then you have a battalion, and then within the battalion you have companies, and you have
Alpha,
Bravo, Charlie, Delta,
Easy
Echo
Company,
right? And then you have a company, and then your company is broken up into teams. Right. So, I was Charlie Company, and and so we all had our different company and our different jobs. So we all go to Fort Campbell together. We're all at Fort Campbell together, and pretty much right when we get to Fort Campbell, they're like, hey, I know you guys are new, but we're leaving in like a month or whatever it was. It was quick. It was super, super fast. I mean, it was so fast that I didn't even get time to train. Like, everyone had already trained up, and they were basically packing up to go. And I was like, I think I'm part of an aerosol unit. I don't know how to do any of this shit.
So this was, you hadn't been to your school? You'd just been to basic?
Well, it was my school. So basic and infantry training was together. Okay. So it was like an extended basic.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
So we get there. Or I'm sorry. So long story short, I'm at my unit for not that long. Some things happen over there and I get assigned to a certain unit. We deploy. And that's kind of like that moment I told you. So it takes us time to get over to Afghanistan. We get to Afghanistan, we land, and I'm like, holy fuck. This is crazy. Right. Like this is I mean, this place is real. I mean, right. Not that you didn't know it was real, but it's, you know, it's like surreal when you're actually there.
No, it's, yeah.
You know, and obviously we're in the green zone. So we're in the green zone. So I'm like, well, that was dumb. Like, there's nothing going on here. You know, so besides the, you know, the random.
It's not that bad.
You know, we were in Kandahar. So it was like the random alarm
dear
going
mom
on.
Mom and dad.
Yeah.
Hello, mother.
So you have the random, you know, rocket that would come in that you wouldn't hear, but the alarm would go off because the base is so big. And then we get pushed out, and we got pushed out to a portion of Afghanistan that borders Pakistan. So literally where we are is you have a FOB, which is a forward operating base, which holds the company itself. And then maybe 3 or 4 miles away, we have a small little outpost, which sits right on the border of Pakistan. And what we do is we do rotations out of it. So there'd be, I don't know, maybe 30 of us that would do rotations out of it at a time. And we're basically providing border patrol, keeping people from coming in and out, whether it's dope or weapons or, you know, whatever it is.
Now explain why, because when you say dope, people are like, wait, what? You're in a war zone. Why would there be?
Yeah. I mean, believe it or not, a lot of the, especially anything opiate related comes from the Middle East, you know, all the heroin. I've never seen so much heroin in my
life.
Golden
Crescent,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So there were missions where, you know, our secondary mission were to, if we were to come across a crop, you know, we would just burn it. That sort of
and
thing.
And that's important. Why? Because that's where the assholes are getting their money.
Right.
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 Not
you
because we're on dope patrol or yeah. Right. Another country.
Understand the heroin trade it really does fund terrorism directly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was times where we got into firefights with 2 or 3 dudes and just because they were defending the crop. Like
right.
they weren't necessarily against, well, I guess they probably were against Americans, but but either way, that was their source.
Right.
Anyways. So that's where we get pushed out. Mike,
explain when you go out to the outpost, you're not there overnight. It's
no.
Like a rotation
yeah,
for a
we
period
do.
Of time.
Yeah, I think it kind of just depended on what was going on at the time, but usually we were up there between, I'd say, minimum of maybe 20 days all the way up to, I think the longest we were up there was maybe a month and a half or 2 months. And we're also running missions out of this COP. So, you know, so a helicopter would come pick us up because we're part of an air assault unit, and off we go into wherever we were going to run whatever mission we were going to run. We also did it in Humvees and AMRAPs.
Yeah, but helicopter's more fun.
Way more fun. yeah. And mind you, I had never done this yet. Like, I hadn't trained in this, and
so
I'm part of an air assault.
So helicopter
the first time I was ever in a Chinook, which is the longer helicopters.
The two,
you know,
twin rotors.
And you bail out off the back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, first time I fucking face planted right off the back. Because it's just, whatever. So
I'm heavy. Oh, there I go.
And I'm gone. And everyone steps over you until, yeah. You know, and I'm just sitting there like a turtle, like kind of roll, like, you know, light infantry my ass because you're heavy as fuck. Right. So first 30-day rotation, we were up there is when it got real. I think within 30 days, we took like 95 rockets and mortars. And this is not, you know, and we're a small target. You know, it's not like this huge outpost. It's not that big at all.
Let me stop you.
And, yeah.
What happened to the outpost just before you got there? You remember that?
That wasn't that outpost.
It wasn't the 70.
I think that was a
little
story. No, 73rd.
Yeah, that wasn't our outpost. Oh, it was gotcha. It was a little ways away. It got overran.
So how big? You mean to say it's not
man.
A big outpost?
I don't even know. Like I feel like if you started at one end and ran to the other, you would be there within 5 seconds, 10 seconds. I mean, it wasn't big at all.
Okay,
you know,
so
you're all running
like,
into each other when you're, you know,
yeah, you're
walking around.
Basically, a tiny little.
50 yards, maybe?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't big. So we were a small target, and it kind of sat low in the mountain range, so people can actually shoot down towards us.
Who thought of that?
Who
Jay?
Strategically thought about this? Yeah. I don't really fucking know. However, this was one thing that we did have in our favor. If you look at it from a distance, it was actually set at an angle. So people thought they could shoot straight down on us, uh-huh. But they're actually shooting over us.
Oh.
From their perception.
Okay,
that
so
makes
it
sense.
Might have been kind of...
Yeah,
smart,
so it's shorter in the
not,
back.
Right,
yeah,
seems,
yeah,
yeah.
So that's when it got really real. And I was like, "Fuck! All right, we're in the shit." Like, I mean, this is front line, and this is it. We were in multiple firefights within that month. You know, like I said, the rockets and mortar thing, you know, it's kind of like you hear them coming and you just kind of like pucker up and you're like, well, let's hope it doesn't hit.
Now, how long does the firefight last? And you said multiple firefights. Are we talking like 5 minutes? Are we talking?
Yeah, they
like,
could have been anything from a, like pop shots, you know, where someone will come pop their head out at some point, some random place, take a few rounds. We try to figure out where it's coming up, coming from and light it up, that right. sort of thing. There was a time somewhere in the deployment where we had a 2.5 hour firefight where they actually did try and overrun that cop.
Right.
That was a pretty hellacious firefight. But in the end, we all came out okay.
And when these rockets come in, you're just kind of...
So there's a difference between rockets. When I say rockets, I mean... so you have mortars.
Right.
Right? And then you have something called a recoilless rifle, which I think is an old Russian weapon.
It's
an
RPG?
Think. No, it's not an RPG. Okay. It almost looks like a cannon. It takes like two people to pick up, and they can mount it somewhere, aim it, and shoot it off.
Okay.
In Afghanistan, it was four people to pick up and shoot it?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
But they're fast as fuck. They run fast as fuck. They're just not that strong.
Pick this up.
So here's the thing about the mortars. The mortars, when you hear them whistling through the air, as long as you can hear them whistling, right. you're okay. The second you stop the whistle, you're like, fuck, it's going to hit close.
Yeah.
So
why is that?
I think it just has to do with the way it moves through the air.
Okay.
I think. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. But every single time I didn't hear it, I mean, we felt it, you know.
Okay.
Recoilless rifles, you couldn't hear coming. You heard the bang, but you couldn't hear it coming. And when it hit, that was pretty bad. Luckily, we never took a direct hit from one of those. Been close, but never actually did it. Running missions in and out of this forward operating base, and then also this small little outpost. In August of 08... I remember, and again, remember I told you Paul and Jason were operating in different areas.
Your buddies
right. We're all close, but you know, we're all operating right. in different areas. And plus, you know, we kind of all keep tabs on each other in some way, shape or form.
You know, they're out there, but they're working in a different department basically.
Right. Yeah. August 08, Paul gets killed and he ended up, they ran over, he was a gunner in a Humvee and he ran over, a double stacked anti-tank mine in a Humvee.
Oof.
So, that was, and I had no idea actually he was killed. There's something called going black. And when it goes black, that means you're not allowed to get on any type of internet, SATCOM phone, nothing, because someone is killed and the family hasn't been notified yet. And they don't want the family to know.
Right.
That sort of thing. So I remember we went black for God knows the 100th time by this point. And, at some point I was able to get back on the phone. And I called my dad and he was actually the one that told me that he was killed.
Yeah, so let me explain something from this end. So from our point of view, we were on all of the the military websites, and then there was specific ones for Afghanistan and then also at some point for Iraq. And so what would happen is it would lay out every day exactly what was happening in if something bad happened. And so we would know if we knew the province that he was in. And so if they said, you know, a province went black, then we know that there was that someone was killed or multiple people were killed. And, you know, we've talked about this like how many times, right? It's kind of sad because, you know, from a selfish point of view, it was one of those things where you knew that they were going black, but then you saw that it wasn't the province that I knew he was in. And it was almost a relief. But on the flip side, that means that other soldiers were killed. And you understand that
someone,
that dilemma.
Yeah, some other family, some other family is getting the knock on the door.
Right. So every time he was in Paktika province, every time Paktika province went black, we're like, fuck me.
Right, because you don't know.
No, we don't know shit. Right. And there's
Something
bad happened, but we don't know. Who, what, where, you know, waiting for the knock on the door. Just have no idea. That was a long fucking year and a half, I'll tell you that. Anyway, go ahead.
My dad ends up telling me he was killed. And honestly, I don't remember. I remember him telling me, but then I kind of don't remember after that a little bit. I think I got off the phone pretty quick. And I'm also not in a place where I feel like I can let my emotion get to me because we're running missions constantly. And I feel like, you know, in situations like that, when you let emotion get involved, that becomes safe for yourself. and it becomes unsafe for everybody else around you because of the decisions that you have to make. So I kind of just swallowed it and, you know, you move on, that sort of thing. That was in August, and continued doing missions, got into other things. Then February of 2009, Jason gets killed. And, that one I found out actually pretty quick. And, you know, he was sitting in a AMRAP, and a suicide bomber had pulled up next to them and detonated this vehicle. And, that one was bad because I had heard that not everyone had been killed right away. So that was a little rough. And so now by this point, because of the things that I've experienced on this deployment and having the two closest guys next to me now dead, you know, I had kind of started to wander in I don't preach religion to anyone, but you know, I had a faith before going, and then, you know, during this, I was kind of like, damn, this is pretty fucked up shit. You know, I'm seeing a lot of fucked up stuff, and I'm starting to now go down a rabbit hole of not really having any sort of belief system, and then kind of becoming, and almost like kind of becoming more animalistic in the things that I was doing, the things that I was seeing. And I, honestly, at the time, I don't think I really had a choice because it was bad. It was really, really bad. So time now goes on. We're getting close to the end of the deployment, and we had an instance where and I'll make this quick, cause then I'll go into exactly why I'm leading it, what I'm leading up to. This was kind of the last straw for me. We were back at our forward operating base. We had guys, setting up to either ambush an element that was going to come out, or they were just going to start shooting at us from wherever they were at. So they see it on this big camera that we have in the middle of our FOB, and they're identifying, targets. And so our mortar team, they give the green light to the mortar team to say, let's take these dudes out. They start shooting. We immediately know that these mortar rounds are not hitting where they're supposed to be hitting, and we all see it.
Now you know where they're supposed to hit, and you see where they are hitting, and you're like, well, that's not it.
Yeah, because there was a village just outside of our base called the Three Sisters, and it was three, basically, they're called kalats, and you know, these mud huts or whatever, and there's three little villages right next to each other. And we kind of had an idea where these guys were, and then we're just watching, you know, these little buildings just start to explode. And we're like, oh, fuck. Like, that can't be good. You know, that sort of thing. And then before we know it,
it wasn't what you were.
Yeah. They ended up killing these dudes, but, you know, there was also a lot of collateral damage that happened in this incident. And I remember they started bringing, the locals knew we were there, so they started bringing bodies up for aid. And I remember the first one I had seen was a little boy. And he had his left arm blown off, and I could see when he would take breaths, his lungs would come out the side of his chest and breathe. And I remember seeing that, and I wasn't working on him, but I remember seeing it like, fuck, dude, like, what the fuck is going on right now? This is insane. I mean, because even in the moment, you still have that second to be like, what the fuck?
It's outside of yourself.
Yeah. 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 And you're looking at a kid.
Right.
You're not looking at an asshole.
We've said this, and we'll say it again. The kids are always the hardest.
So by this point, we've called in for extra medevac, so the helicopters to come in and pick these people up, because we're pushed out so far, we can only give so much aid. They need to go somewhere that has a hospital, which would have been Kandahar. I think that's where Bagram. I think, I don't know.
And how far from
either? We were far. Yeah, we were pretty far.
Even by, you're gonna have to airlift these people.
Yeah, and it's gonna be a minute.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. How much time? I don't know, but too much time.
Right. Long enough to where you're going, they might not survive the trip.
Yeah. Long story short, we're trying to load bodies. We're trying to get bodies that we know are workable, or we're able to work on them to our helipad. We're at the helipad, and I remember a buddy of mine, Danny, he goes, hey, I heard on the radio, there's one more body coming in. I'm like, cool. So we get on a four-wheeler. We had like three or four four-wheelers, and because now we're back at the FOB, which is bigger.
Right.
Can hold a company. So we get over to the
What's that distance?
It's pretty big. I mean, I don't know. Maybe like
going from A to B. We're talking miles, or are we talking no.
Maybe
yards,
like
hundreds of yards.
Maybe like a football field and a half. Okay. Two football fields. Sure. Enough to where you can't run it. Right, you know. So you get on the Gator. Boom. Get over to the other side, and I'm on the back. So picture him driving the Gator. I'm on the back. We're back to back, and I'm immediately handed a little girl, And so I get handed this little girl, and he now is hauling ass back to the helipad. And I'm looking at her like, what the fuck? Like, I don't see anything wrong with her.
Okay. Was she responsive or anything?
She's looking at me.
Okay.
Yeah, she's looking at me. And so I remember she was in some little skirt, and I pull up her skirt, and I'm looking for holes. I'm looking for any blood, and I don't see anything. And we hit a bump, and just enough to where it kind of tweaked her head a little bit, and I saw a slit open in her throat, kind of just like right below her Adam's apple. And then she started turning blue. And then I knew that she's not breathing, and right. Now her airway is, like, there's no air coming in right. at all. Long story short, you know, I tried my best. She didn't survive. And I worked on her as much as I could before I was able to get her onto the helicopter. And after that incident, that's when I was like, there is no God that exists in this world. You know, right. after everything leading up to this point, no fucking way.
Yeah, there can't be. If there's this no way. Kind of stuff happens.
There's no fucking way. So I think by this point we didn't have that much time left. They picked myself and three or four. I'm sorry. There's five of us all together to go home first, and that's to get everything ready back at home before the main element comes back. And so and usually they take the guys that you know. So like pretty actually all of us we were all. SDM, so they're squad designated marksmen. So I don't know why they did this, but they all took the guys with the long range rifles and they're like, hey, you guys are going to go home first. Whatever, fuck it.
Now, how long had you been there at this point?
At this point, we were going on 13 months.
Okay. And so now you're told.
So now we're told we're going home.
Everybody's going home, but you're going home first.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And they're right behind us. It's like 2 weeks.
No, right. You know. But you're, you know what I mean? It's like, you know,
yeah.
Getting to but still
at this,
early.
Right. But at this point, still we're like, we're done.
Yeah.
Like, this is done.
Right.
So we get to some other base, I forgot what it was, before we can actually get to the green zone. And I remember we were there for about a night or two, and then our squad leader who was with us comes in, he goes, hey, are you guys down for one more mission? And we're like, what the fuck? Like, is this like a joke? This has got to be a joke.
Right.
And they're like, well, they kind of want everyone's approval on this one because we have a high value target in our area. We don't want to give it to the unit that's coming in because they haven't been here before. And we know this place like the back of our hand. Are you guys down? And we're all the squad designated marksmen. We know we're going to be involved right. in this some way, right? So we're like, you know what? Fuck it. Yeah. Fuck yeah. We're down. So.
Which goes to what we've talked about, which is you just do it.
You can't teach
you
it.
You can't teach it. You,
no.
Either you sack up and do it or
yeah.
you.
Yeah. And then our thought process too. You know, we know this place. Like, we're not going right. to let some unit come in and just get fucking their ass handed
this
to them.
This is my job. I want
right.
to. Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, by this point, I'm ready. Everyone's dying. By this point, like if I get another chance to go back and handle some business, we're going to go back and handle some business.
Right.
And so the next day we get on a helicopter, boom, we're back. And now we're getting briefed. We have a high value target. And at the time we weren't allowed to talk about it, but I can talk about it now. That was in Pakistan because we weren't allowed to be in Pakistan at the time. And we were working with some ODA groups, which are some special forces guys.
ODA stands for
Operation Detachment Alpha, which okay. are Green Berets. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, hey, this is the info that we have. We need to do a movement to contact. So basically what that is, you take an element that is on foot and say, you walk that way. This is where we're going. And basically we're targets and we're going to wait till we get shot at and then boom, we know where they're at.
So you got to stick around and go on this last mission to be bait.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here's the funny part. I actually wasn't part of that dismounted element at first. So I was actually driving one of the AMRAPs.
Okay.
So we drive to a certain point and then we dismount. And I remember a guy named Matt who was part of the dismounted element was like, I forgot what the conversation was, but I knew he wasn't feeling it. Like, I don't know if he was sick or whatever. I was like, dude, I'll do it. Don't worry about it. I'll fucking do it. Perfect. We switch roles right there. Boom. There was, I want to say 7 or 8 of us. There's about 7 or 8 of us in this dismounted element. And what our goal was to walk all the mountaintops and hilltops hoping to start taking rounds, and then that's going to let everybody else know where.
Right, so you're walking the ridge line, exposing your silhouette, which is against what you would normally do, but
right.
you're doing it just to get
right.
their attention.
Right, right, okay. right. So
Robert's sitting here going, yeah. "That's fucking crazy, yeah. man." You're just.
I think about this now. You know, like you know, was this
hopefully not well placed rounds?
Right. Yeah. Like 10 years later, and I'm like, "Fuck."
So what are you, an asshole?
I know. Yeah, so,
but, okay, so that brings up a good
Somebody's
point.
Somebody's got to do it though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and this said, is why we send our young people in
right.
to do this
but
stuff.
But you said, no, yeah, not a problem. Not only not a problem to going and doing it, right? Because let's face it, when your guy comes in and says, this is kind of up to you because we're scheduled to go home and here's the reasons why it should be us. And you feel free to say no. And yet it seems like nobody says no. Right. And then you got your buddy who maybe has, you know, Afghani revenge, you know, right. or whatever.
Which we've all had at some point.
He's got a stomach problem. And he says, I can't, you know, I can't go out there and be chum. Even if he was literally just too terrified and didn't want to get, you know, murked.
Which I don't think was the case.
No, I don't, I'm not saying that either. Yeah. But even if you did think that was the case, there's no way you're just going. Yeah. No, not only will I volunteer to skip going home right away so we can go do this mission, but I'm going to step up and say, yeah, I'll be the guy that walks the ridgeline as bait.
Right.
And there's no hesitation.
And, you know, in hindsight, when you think, well, I haven't got to this part of the story yet, but he made a decision that saved all our lives too.
Okay.
So it's probably good that he made that. Back, not right. to say I wouldn't have made that decision if I was still in that position, but whatever. Either way, it worked right, out the way
okay.
it did.
So you, that's what I was saying.
You everybody was in the place that they were supposed to
yeah.
be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you're not hesitant. It has to be.
No.
Me.
Right.
Right. Okay.
So we start our dismounted element and we just start walking. And how far we walked, I don't really know at first, but I do know for a fact we were in Pakistan by the time, you know, we were, you know, because we relayed to the trucks where we were. So we would get maybe, I don't know, half a mile and then not even half a mile, maybe a quarter mile. And then we would radio to the trucks, okay, move up. And then so they would start moving up and snaking their way through what we call wadis, you know, which is kind of like little gullies, you know, and so it takes time for the trucks to get to you because, you know, the terrain is crap out there. We were probably faster on foot than they were in trucks at some point. So I remember, at right before something, this incident happened. I remember, there's a picture and we'll post it. Mm-hmm. I have a picture. I had took a picture right before this had happened and it was kind of like, it's not a selfie, but you know, kind of everyone's just sitting there and I took a picture and I remember thinking, I'm like, man, we're fucked. Like there's no cover here. There's no cover. We're on the side of a fucking mountain. There's nothing here. Then we start to get relayed information saying that they're getting ICOM chatter, which is little scanners that we had that would pick up frequencies from assholes talking.
Right.
Right.
You could basically eavesdrop.
Right.
Okay.
We started getting ICOM chatter that they see us. And then sometimes they're like, they might just be fronting because they did that a lot. You know, they'd be like, oh, we see the Americans.
Oh, we
and
see them. They're right
they're
there.
Like, yeah, whatever,
they're
dude.
Full of shit. You know,
aloha snack bar.
But the.
Hell salami bacon.
Right.
Bacon salami.
But what made this different is that they were actually talking in such a way that they were very militaristic in what they were saying. They knew what weapons we were carrying, they knew how many of us there were. And we're like, fuck.
So what you hear tells you no shit.
That's legit. But it's not like also like the normal like Taliban you've been fighting. And we didn't find out who we were fighting till later. And I'll get there. But it just was different. So we're walking up this mountain.
Now, real quick on the different.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we always talk about, you know, your trust your gut, trust your senses, all that kind of stuff. Could you, if you're sitting down with somebody who understands and had been there and... Could you actually point to A, B, and C in the radio chatter? I mean, obviously you said they knew what weapons and stuff like that that made you think they weren't just bullshitting and they really could see you.
Mm.
But could you actually point to terminology or specific things that were said, verbiage, things like that, that gave you the sense that these weren't your typical
Well, we were getting
hodges?
It relayed to us.
Right. Or was this like a sixth sense kind of a, this isn't, this something's not right.
Yeah, it was more like, okay, that's weird that they just counted us. Okay, that's weird that they got the number right. Okay, that's weird that they know what kind of weapons we have in our hands. That was the red flag.
Hinky, factual things that you could point to that are different than the normal.
Yeah. Probably more militaristic, more maybe disciplined.
Yeah, more disciplined.
You know,
more
things that they're
in.
Talking about and thinking about. You know, the average Joe Blow's running right. the hills up there. Don't even give right. a
like
shit.
This
or even
guy
know.
Knows what he's talking
right.
about.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. So we start walking and as soon as we crest, like we're getting to the top of this mountain and we start to work our way down it. And as soon as we start to walk our way down, I mean, it was just like, the only way I could describe it was like, if you're standing in a football stadium, you know, taking pictures, like that's just what it looked like.
Oh,
and just
gracious.
Rounds. I mean, RPGs, small arms fire, automatic fire. I mean, it went to shit quick as fuck. I mean, like I'd never seen anything like that up to this point. And obviously there's no cover, there's no concealment, we're on the side of a mountain, there's rounds exploding all around you, and we all do the same thing. We all drop our packs and, you know, now we're all trying to line up in a way that we can at least start laying down cover fire for each other to get in certain positions. the I'm trying to think. As we had our I had an M14, and then another guy named Chris had a M240, which was pretty much the only thing that was keeping us alive at that point, just because of the volume of rounds that can go down range at that point, and also make it to the point where these guys were. The problem was is that we were also shooting at an element that was shooting the same way back. So they talk about talking guns, right? You don't just hold the trigger down and just let a fucking bunch of rounds go, because you're going to run out of ammo. You know, so it's boom, boom, boom. The other guy next to you, boom, 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 boom. They're called talking guns.
Right.
Well, they were doing the same shit back at us.
Oh.
And that's how you immediately knew, like, this is not the same ever. Like, it's never been like this.
Right.
Not only that, but we're now starting to take fire from different positions. And they're getting closer.
So tactically, they're operating under something that...
So we're trying to move, right, and they're moving.
Yeah.
But they're moving in such a way that we're just caught in an ambush, and there's too many guns for our seven or eight. Like I said, I don't remember how many there was. I think maybe top seven of us, eight of us.
So how far behind you guys is the truck element now?
We had no idea. And so check this out. So we're trying to... So our comm guy's trying to get on the comms, but because of the, I don't know... The metal that's in the rocks... A lot of times the frequencies would bounce. So you would get on the radio. And
the place is just a shithole on every level.
They couldn't.
Even the rocks hate
even
you.
Even the rocks hate you.
So they couldn't hear anything that was going on. So we're in it. So we are in it. We're doing our best. And, you know, you'd have like little lulls. Well, and those lulls were them maneuvering on us and them just getting closer. That's
could
all
you,
that was.
Could you see them? And, or the only way you could ID them by flash?
No. Well, at first was flash. Mm-hmm. And then you start to see them move. And then you got to hear their voices talking.
Like silhouette move or actual?
No,
like,
you saw them.
Okay.
Yeah, they got close enough to where you could see the eyeballs. Okay. I mean, it was close. It was fucking close. And then when you can hear them whispering, you know, when, you know, they're trying to stay quiet. But when you hear it, you know, it's such an eerie feeling. I don't know how to explain that feeling. And it was probably around that time where I knew I wasn't going to walk off that mountain, just because of the element we knew we were facing. And how, you know, it was only seven of us, eight of us. And we were running out of ammo quick, very, very fast. I believe everyone pretty much had run out of ammo. I had one magazine left, and our big machine gun had about 100 rounds. And I was standing next, or I was laying down next to the machine gun. And I remember Chris telling me, he's like, dude, I'm about to run out. And 100 rounds is nothing for a machine gun.
Yes, your machine gunner was Chris.
Yeah, he was going to spit that out in about 3 seconds, whatever it took, and we were done. And I remember thinking, okay, there's more rounds in our packs. You just got to get to them. I just don't know where they are. I just know they're like that way across the mountain. And so I remember I gave Chris my rifle, and I gave him the last magazine I had in my pouch. And I remember looking at our medic, and I was like, do not fucking come get me. I was like, don't. Because I knew I was dead. Like at that point, I knew if I had fallen, it was just leading everybody else out to just get shot. And I remember thinking in that, like right before I took off too, and I told, I remember telling him, don't you fucking come get me. And I remember looking forward, and I remember that was the first time I was like, God, please don't let anything happen to me. And when I took off running, it was crazy, because it was almost like I wasn't scared anymore. And and prior to this, and after this was debriefed, everyone kind of just knew that was it. You know, we were all okay with what was about to happen, because we were all going to do it together. You know, that sort of thing.
And acceptance.
And the hell if we were going to be taken prisoner.
Goddamn right.
Fuck no, that was not happening. Take off running. And I remember, and you know, a lot of people don't believe, you know, when I tell this story, and I haven't told too many people this story before, but a lot of people.
Now you're telling a lot.
Now I'm telling a lot of people. You know, so you have rounds, and then you've got tracer rounds. Mm-hmm. And tracer rounds have a little bit of magnesium at the tip, and that's what lights up, usually for shooting at night, so where you could see it.
Right. Impacting. And it's not even every round. It's every, you know,
yeah, I'm not
third,
sure.
Every 10th, every 5th, whatever.
Yeah,
it
depending
is.
On the weapon system.
Right,
yeah, just so you could walk it into your
target. Exactly. Right, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, and there's a difference between a bullet hissing and a bullet cracking, you know, when it's coming by you. And also, you got to understand that we're on the side of a mountain. So I'm running like sideways. Like I can put my hand out and touch the side of the mountain.
It's that steep.
It's that steep. You know, so I take off running, and immediately I can hear their fire pick up, because now I'm moving, and, you know, these rocks are exploding all around me. And I'm watching tracer rounds coming in as if they were going to impact me, and they don't. weirdest fucking thing ever. And almost like kind of like, oh, like, oh, it's going to suck.
Brace for it. Yeah. And nothing happens.
And nothing happened. Right. Almost like they went around me. If I can like picture it in my brain, it was,
I'm just thinking of Pulp Fiction right now.
Yeah. Divine Intervention. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. No. Oh, go ahead.
No. After he's done, I have a different perspective of what happened speaking to someone that was actually there, which is very interesting what he's saying right now.
And so I remember, you know, and in that moment, you know, the first few were like, oh, fuck, this is going to suck. And then it was almost like I had a calm, like, I'm good. I'm straight. Nothing is going to fucking touch me, and I know it. I make it to the first bag, which just happened to be mine. And I knew I had machine gun rounds in it. The next one was Chris's, which had machine guns around in it. And it was almost in arm's distance. And I remember grabbing both of them. I took a breath and I was like,
okay, so what distance did you run from where he was shooting to the bags?
About
50 feet, 100 yards.
It's so hard to tell because the terrain, and I would say, if I had to guess, maybe I would say anywhere between 30 and 50 yards.
Okay.
I would say, grabbed both the bags and I kind of took a breath and I was like, fuck it, round two. Here we go.
Right, you got to do it all over.
And in my brain too, I'm like, okay, if I survive the first one, I'm sure as hell not surviving the second one, because now they're laying waste. I mean, they're laying waste. And go running back. Same thing. Almost, but the second part though, the second time I ran back, I kind of don't remember. It was almost like I blacked out. So I don't know if that was adrenaline kicking in. I mean, I'm sure I was already in adrenaline, but maybe that was just an overload of adrenaline and I can't remember. I don't really know.
You get into like a second tier of, I'm doing this again. And
yeah, get to the machine gun and immediately I'm feeding rounds to Chris and he's loading it up. I'm reloading my rifle.
No, wait, you black out to some degree.
When I say black out, I mean, it was like hazy.
Yeah, it was, it's all like foggy and you're kind of outside of yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But then when you get there, and you realize you did it twice.
It was almost, yeah. Well, actually, right when I got there, I was like, we're back in it. We're in it now. Like,
so you know, no time to think, oh my God, I made it. It's just.
No, we're in it.
Okay.
Yeah. Because now I feel like we have hope. Because, right. You know, that was the only hope we had. And that now we have it. Simultaneously, Matt, who had switched positions with me in the beginning, had been trying, all of them in the trucks had been trying to get comms with us and hadn't. But they're hearing a firefight going. And really what they're actually hearing are the audibles from the RPGs, the explosions from the RPGs going off.
Okay.
Because the firefight itself, I don't think they could hear too well. Because you got to remember the sound is also echoing off of everything. But the big concussions, they're definitely hearing. So they know something's happening and we're not coming up on the radio.
Right.
So Matt is the lead truck and he just says, fuck it. I'm going to make a decision right now and we're going. And everybody followed. And I don't know how long between the time I had made it back to the machine gun and the trucks had come, but all I remember is it's almost like a scene out of a movie where they're coming around the corner and, you know, it's like the cavalry's
right,
there.
Right.
And
you hear the A-Team theme playing.
And yeah. I mean, and just
right?
every gun,
right.
every gun on that truck and everybody that could get out of the truck a little bit with a rifle, I mean, was just hosing everything.
You're going, you're in trouble, now, yeah. motherfucker.
You know,
while all this is going on, are we in Pakistan?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, what was the plan? I mean, I know you guys were sent out as bait to find where these guys are shooting from. Well, you found them, but what was fucking plan?
Yeah. So,
I think the guys that found them were not what you were planning on finding you.
So what ended up happening, we found it afterwards, we actually ran into an element of Chechenian fighters, Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. That knew what the fuck they were doing.
Okay. So are these Muslim Chechenians that came for the cause?
Yeah.
Trained in the USSR.
Yeah. Okay. So these motherfuckers.
I'm talking about like.
And they probably know Afghanistan.
100% they know Afghanistan. Right. I mean, like red beards and everything.
How long did they spend there? Jesus.
Yeah. After when, you know, they did the battle damage assessment, they all got red beards and some of them looked white, like white guys. It was weird. So anyways, you know, they come around the corner and they got 50 cals and Mark 19s and they're blowing everything to shit. I supposedly there was a drone up that watched this entire thing unfold, but I don't know. I tried to get some
footage.
Yeah, but nothing ever happened. But supposedly there was a drone up that saw this entire thing and I'm like, where the fuck were my airship at that point?
Right.
But every time you needed them, the air was red for some reason.
Which means?
They couldn't fly due to weather.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's fucking clear skies. What are you talking about?
Yeah, air is down due to gravity.
Yeah.
There's gravity.
Pretty much. So the so anyways, you know, they come around the corner and, you know, they lay waste obviously some of these assholes, they run. Then we were able to kind of give ourselves some time to retreat and get down to these trucks. And I'll never forget getting into the back of the truck. And I remember another guy named Jonathan, I got into the truck and he looked at me and like, he's like, I'd never seen a look like that on someone's face before. And he just goes, are you okay? And I answered him. I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm okay. I don't know what the fuck I just happened right now. Right. You know, because there's so much emotion that goes into your body and out of your body. And,
right.
And then plus the other thing that happened while I was running, and it was, you know, there's just a lot of things that are going on. It took me a long time to process everything that was happening in that time. And long story short, after this, we go home. We went home shortly after this incident. I'm going to go back.
Okay.
So we did the battle damage assessment. You know, after this, there was, I think, I want to say a 60 to 70 man element that was waiting for the convoy to come through.
So 10 to 1.
So we hacked absolutely just, you know, we just happened to walk into that, you know, sort of thing. So, yeah. So I'm actually kind of surprised. I'm surprised they actually fired at us thinking that we were going to be the only element. But, you know, whatever it is, they probably saw us as an easy target. And we were right. A soft target. Yeah. And after, you know, we had bullet holes in our packs, we had bullet holes in our ACUs, like armpit areas or like the crotch area where it was, you know, kind of baggy. All of us had bullet holes in our ACUs, and not one of us was hit. Not one of us was hit by a bullet. I don't remember how many we had killed. I don't remember the time or the amount of people we had killed or whatever that was. But yeah, it's amazing what you know, a little group of guys can do, you know, to a bigger element. You know, when obviously you have the will to survive. Not only that, I won't mention his name, but we did have a lieutenant with us in this firefight. And when I say seven, we had six with us because we found him. We didn't know where he was. We thought he had been killed at some point in the movement. We found him in a bush and he didn't fire one round during the entire incident. And this was a West Point grad Ranger school.
Wow.
Yeah. You
can't teach courage.
No.
Again, you can.
You want to talk about,
you have it or you don't.
It took everything we had to let him walk down that hill. Like, we wanted him dead. Like, I mean, it was bad. One of the guys had thrown his weapon. He said, fuck, if I get shot, I'm gonna get shot on the way down. It's your fucking fault. Like, you know, everyone was ripping off their rank. Like, fuck you. You don't deserve, you know, to be, or, you know, to be in command of us. Like, this is,
how was he responding?
He didn't.
He just shut the fuck up.
Yeah, he didn't. He was gone the day after. He was out.
He's in the Joint Chiefs of Staff right now.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, anyways,
you got promoted.
I'm just thinking LAPD way. That's all.
Yeah, you got to promote incompetence.
Yeah, right. So we all walked away from that. Obviously, changed, and I walked away from it changed because I felt like that was a really big, you know, that was a big slap in the face. Like, don't ever like question, you know, whether I'm here or not, because I'm here. Right. And honestly, if it wasn't for that, I probably, you know, I would have never thought. I always would have just had the same memories and the same outlook on my entire deployment. I would have been like, no, there's no way that anybody exists. There's no way a God exists, period, until that happened. And I felt like that was a slap in the face and it was something I needed. You know, so it's just crazy.
Does I show you?
That's literally what it was for me. Yeah. Right. You know, and I had to go through a lot of things to get to that point. But,
well, I mean, everybody goes through a moment where you say, how can, you know, this, you know, how can this be, you know, how can God exist if this can happen?
Right.
And then somehow there seems to be this running theme where you get to that point and he goes, I'll show you how.
Yep. And he did it. Yeah. He did it. Yeah. So we actually came home. And it wasn't even I don't even know how long after we came home, but you know, we come home, we get home, military's like, oh yeah, your entire unit, you know, severe PTSD, go home, have fun. All right, cool.
So you were going to tag up on that.
So, and I don't know if he knows this story.
I kind of know it.
You do, from Doc, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's home, and we fly out.
I'm going to guess Doc is the medic.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, got it.
So when I say home, he's in Kentucky, home.
Okay.
Right, so they get back to their base. We fly out there.
You think?
To greet them, you know, and all that stuff. So we're at the house one day when off base when everybody was, I think we were having a barbecue.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were having a barbecue and his unit was there, or a portion of his unit was there.
Everybody that was there that day was there.
Your squad and all the guys that were on the column and everything. Mm. Okay.
Right. So well, we knew about the incident and we knew what happened. And
Lieutenant wasn't there, right?
Yeah. He wasn't invited.
He was not invited.
No, he was,
getting promoted. Yeah. He was getting promoted. So I ended up talking to, and I can't remember the doc's first name. What was his name? Do you remember?
No. He wasn't even assigned to us for that long.
No, he wasn't. Mm-hmm. So I was talking to him. I was talking to the doc. And we were talking about this incident that happened. And he was telling me his perspective, which was very interesting. So he said, number one, that he did say, don't, whatever you guys do, don't follow me because it's probably not going to end well. But someone's got to go.
Right.
Doc had already decided that he was going. No matter what he said. Doc said that he had already taken off all of his shit so he could run faster. I'm talking about Doc.
Right.
Because he knew there was no doubt that he was going to get hit and that Doc, come hell or high water, was going to go get him.
Sure.
I mean, that's just the way it was. Right? So that's number one. So he was going to go. Number two.
Well, that's what we talked about. You can order someone not to do it, but.
You can't train that. Right. And again, speaking to the guy, I have no doubt in my mind that if something happened, he was going to do it.
Right.
He was going to do it. But here's the thing. So he said that he was crouched down. He took all of his shit off. And the second he took off, he was like almost the way I pictured it was like he was in a sprinter stance, right, ready for the gun to go off, blocks, right?
In the starting gate.
Yeah, like exactly. In the starting gate, right? And he said all of a sudden the whole mountain lit up and there were rounds coming everywhere. And he said that how do you describe it? He said everything that should have hit him didn't hit him. And he said it was very strange. It was like the rounds were going around him. And every time rounds would come through, he was ready to go, but he kept on running.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it almost seemed as though rounds were bending. Now, again, this is his perspective.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody let's listen to this can take it for what it is. But it seemed to the doc that the rounds were going around him. Rounds that should have been hitting him were not hitting him. And he did it once when he went down. And then when he started to come back, everything the same happened again. He came back with the ammo, so on and so forth. And the doc said for a second, he sat there and he was like, what the fuck just happened?
Right.
Like it wasn't normal.
Like that shouldn't
have
happened.
What the fuck just happened? And he said that he was almost in a, and again, I'm sure it took seconds, but he was like paused for seconds of like, okay, I'm not really sure what I just saw. And then he put his shit together and kept on fighting, you know, and then all that. So that was just an interesting perspective on what he said, because this is from another guy that was watching what happened.
Right.
Now, you know, how do you explain that?
Well, I know how I explain it.
Well, I know how I explain it too, and probably
it's up to a lot of other people to figure out how they explain it. But that's not the only time that you will hear a story just like that. And if you think it's dumb luck, then I would say it takes more. Yeah. It takes more delusion to believe that that's dumb luck than it does to realize that there's a larger force at work. I think.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's me and that's us obviously here around this table. But, you know, it's funny that you mentioned Band of Brothers because now as you tell me that story, all I can think about is that story of the lieutenant going right up the road and everybody's shooting at him.
Yeah.
He gets where he needs to go, delivers what he needs to deliver message and then turns around and goes right back down the road. Germans on either side. You know, and you're in that same unit. And he goes, I'm going to do it again. Watch. <You know>? Watch, same unit. I'm going to do it again, guys. Check this out. Yeah. You know.
Hold my beer.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, wow. That's banana. And for the listeners, I haven't heard that. That's the first time I've heard that story.
Yeah, I don't tell it too often.
Yeah. There's certain things. It's like, that's for me. That's, you know, that's my thing. But it's also, you know.
I mean, in the end, also, to be honest with you, there's a good majority of time I couldn't talk about it.
Sure.
Like I just couldn't, like it just wasn't something I was willing to talk about. It wasn't something that my brain or my body allowed me to talk about. And I know we've talked about, you know, going to therapy and seeing people and whatever, you know, I go to therapy every week and, you know, and these are things for things that happened, you know, from the military and then things that, you know, continue to happen, you know, as a police officer, you know, and a lot of times when I get into certain incidents, it reminds me of things or reminds me of feelings that I've had in the past, and things start to surface. Like when I got into my shooting in 2017, a lot of things started to resurface, you know, that I actually hadn't been I hadn't let it really, I guess, take over me, but it was kind of just too much. And then, you know, start seeing someone.
You have to eat it in bites, not try to
take
it all at once. Yeah.
Flashbacks can be a motherfucker.
Yeah. You know what's funny about the whole flashback thing is that I have a lot of friends that have had a lot of flashbacks, but I've only had one.
I've had two.
One. Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're weird.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I mean, just the sick feeling. And one was Disneyland. With the family at Disneyland 2 years after the incidents happened.
Uh-huh.
And we're walking out to the trams to go back to the parking lot, and the fireworks start going off. And as soon as the first boom went off, my blood ran cold, hair on the back of my neck stood up. I almost, you know, took a crouching position behind the stroller to take cover.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I got, you know, my daughters were 1 year old, you know? And then you realize what it is. You're like, oh, okay.
It's like your brain, cool. But your brain puts you there.
Yeah. But then as they're still going off, it's still unnerving. Yeah. And it's like, I know what it is, but I just can't stop this feeling from happening.
Yeah.
The first time, it was the first, it was the law enforcement memorial. We went up to the, in California, in Sacramento, they have a law enforcement memorial. And every year they put new names on it for all the officers killed in the line of duty. And it was my first year going to that after I had been in the shooting. And I remember standing there, and I've been to it before, you know, been to it 1 year prior. And I remember standing there, and they do the 21-gun salute. And, you know, you see them, you see the rifles, you see everything get ready. I know what to expect. I know what's about to happen. And as soon as that first volley went off, and I saw the muzzle flash and I heard the bang, I just tears instantly. And I wasn't crying, I wasn't falling apart, but it just lump in my throat, tears. And it wasn't because, you know, we were at the law enforcement memorial, that, you know, that's emotional and moving. It was just this instant response to the gunfire that I didn't expect. And, you know, I didn't like, you can't control it, and it doesn't make you weak or it just, that's the way your body's going to deal with it. It's just going to help you in small doses. And at that moment it said, okay, now's the time for you to go ahead and let some of this shit out.
Sure. Yeah.
So, and really, I think with all of this that he's talking about, law enforcement in general and flashbacks and all that stuff, I've come to learn that when that bridge is crossed, in someone else's words, which was actually the first time I heard it, but when the bridge is crossed, you can't cross it back. So once that bridge is crossed, it's crossed, the bridge is burned to the ground.
Right.
It's how you deal with it from that point forward. And so it's never going to go away, but, you know, everybody deals with it differently, but it does have to be dealt with.
Right.
And really for, you know, those of you out there that are listening to this, by dealing with it in little doses, like you guys are talking about, does make a difference and does change things in the big picture. It really does.
Yeah. How do you eat an elephant?
Yeah.
One bite at a time.
Mm. Exactly.
And you know, if this is your elephant, don't ignore it, but don't try and suck it down.
I was just about to say that, but pretending that you didn't cross that bridge
is
you're just bullshitting yourself.
Yeah, exactly. You can't unsee
things. You crossed it.
Yeah.
You crossed it. So now you figure out the best way to deal with it. Right.
You can't. Yeah. Right. So you can't unring a bell. So.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
Anyway.
Thanks. I appreciate you sharing. And if this story, you know, speaks to you, if it's important to you, there are places that you can reach out to. We are about to go and speak to the founders of the Mighty Oaks Foundation,
which I have been to.
And coincidentally enough, my first time hearing about them, a lot of people don't know the origin of this podcast came out of a different podcast where we got together. And when, you know, my friends who are veterans or cops or whatever, they, you know, some of them would share a, you know, 10 or 15 minute story. And people said, you know, that's cool. You should do just that. So we kind of did that. And I remember the first time that foundation had been brought up. And then a year later or whatever, I saw them in the news, and I typed you just recently, two weeks ago. And I said, didn't you or Milton, did somebody bring up the Mighty Oaks Foundation? And you said, no, I went there, and that's this thing. And so we reached out to them, and we're going to hook up with them and try and talk about what we're doing with this podcast and highlight what they're doing with their foundation. But that's a resource.
Right.
You know,
Huge resource.
Huge resource.
Yeah.
And they
and this is for all first responders, not just military.
It's not just military.
This was all first responders. Right. There, when I went, there was there was majority were the military, but there was definitely a few cops there from different states, and I believe there was a firefighter there as well.
Yeah,
I believe.
And we, you know, we had a at this point the episode will probably have aired, but we had a firefighter on here who practically died twice in a fire. You know, got to a point where, you know, he's walking away from it, and another firefighter looks at him and goes, are you okay, dude? And he's like, I'm fine. And then he wasn't until he saw himself in the reflection of the chrome on the fire truck that he realized
not okay.
Not okay. So that if you think that that's not going to have an impact on you, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You're fooling yourself. And that's the worst person you could possibly fool is yourself. You can fool other people and, you know, pay the consequences for it. But if you fool yourself.
Yeah. You can't see death and destruction every day for 30 years and go, I'll have a beer. I'm good.
Yeah, right.
It's not going to happen.
Right.
And now, granted, that's what we thought worked.
Sure. It doesn't. You know, how many different names have we had for this? We've had battle fatigue. We've had shell shock.
Yeah.
We've had, war weariness. We've had all these different terms over the years that for every major conflict, some soldier somewhere has been, you know, victim to it. And finally, we're realizing, you know, okay, no, this is how it works. Mm-hmm. This is the mechanism at play. And if you think that you can handle it on your own, you're just
fooling yourself.
Mm-hmm. So call us. We got a phone number. We got a voicemail. We won't play it on the air if you just say, hey, I need one of you guys to contact me. And sure. You know, I need some help. Call us. We'll be more than happy to
drop us a DM. Hit us in the DM.
Drop us a direct message. If you, yeah.
Drop us a DM.
Yeah. If we can't help you, we can probably put you in touch with somebody who can.
100%.
And we'd be more than happy to do it.
Yeah.
And it will all be completely between us and you. And ain't nobody got to know. But we just would rather not see another suicide
number,
another number, another statistic. You know, you look at the numbers, I posted it. Firefighters are, you know, the average person, it's like 13-1 ratio for the average person to kill themselves. For police officers, it's 17-1. For firefighters, it's 18-1. And for veterans, it's, I believe, 33-1. And those jumps in the statistical ratio of how many people per, you know, 100,000 of that, that's a huge statistical jump, and you can't ignore it.
No, I've lost more friends by suicide after deployment than I have actually on deployment.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, if you talk to any cop, they'll tell you they know a cop who ate their gun.
Sure.
And they won't want to talk about it because then that's admitting, you know, that could happen to them. But you got to admit it can happen to you because it can happen to anybody.
Sure.
So I appreciate you telling us that story, man.
Yeah.
Telling, you know, everybody that story now for posterity. So you don't ever have to tell it again. If somebody wants to hear it,
replay that shit.
Download the episode. Anybody have any follow-ups to that?
No. It's a good story.
I kind of do. So I said something to Zohan about, I made some comment about, we send our young people off to war. And it is interesting. We talk about the whole PTSD thing because we send them off to war to deal with this stuff before their frontal lobe is even developed. Right?
Right.
25.
Yeah.
It's not till 25 until that's even fully developed.
Right.
And so we send them off to war and they see all this crap. And really, to cops and firemen as well, we hire them at 21?
Mm-hmm.
And then here comes all the shit. And then we expect everybody to deal with it.
Right. And when you see all that stuff, it doesn't matter that you're seeing it at 45. It matters that you're seeing it at 22.
Yeah, it's worse when you're young. And then, you know, again, we've talked about this before. We don't make it like safe. You know, we don't have a safe place to talk about it. We don't, you know, talk about what happened and how it has affected you and how it has affected our young people. I think all the resources we have now, we didn't have years ago. It wasn't okay to talk about, in other words.
I can speak for myself, and I could probably speak for a couple other people I've talked to after they've been on this podcast. And I'm be interested to hear if anyone here disagrees, because I doubt it. But we tell these stories and we talk about the blood, we talk about the guts, we talk about the death, we talk about the, you know, holy shit factors. For me and for a couple people I've talked to, I don't nut up until I start to talk about how I feel about it.
Sure.
I don't get nervous. I don't get scared. I don't get upset. But then as soon as I start to talk about the feelings part of it or what I thought, you know, if you don't think this podcast is actually therapeutic for us you're fooling yourself
because it absolutely is.
Absolutely is. Mm-hmm. But when I get to the feelings part of it and I start talking about, yeah, I, you know, even just now talking about the gunfire or, you know, sharing other stuff that I've said about trying to figure out who at a family dinner I would need to kill first if shit goes sideways, talking about that stuff, you're like, their inner voice screaming, shut up, don't talk about this, don't say this, you're being a pussy, you're not, you know, but you got to ignore that voice. Mm-hmm. You have to ignore that voice.
Yeah, I think we're just wired, or I shouldn't say wired, I think we are molded to look at that as a sign of weakness,
right?
And you know, we're cops, we're firemen, we're military, we're not weak. No. We can't be.
No,
but the reality is that we're human, you know. Right. We're the same human being that, you know, goes to their desk job. Now granted, we're wired probably you know, a little differently, but
right.
You know, we're all human at the end of the day, and it takes its toll. I mean, it takes its toll.
Yeah. Anybody else? Robert, I appreciate you sitting in for another episode. We'd love to have you back, especially, like we said, for we'll get JR in here, and we'll...
Yeah, if he's ever not working overtime.
Right. On the big clock, right?
Yeah.
Wait, so you know JR?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I know I keep hearing the mention of JR, but as it pertains to you, and I'm like...
No, they know each other in real life.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know that.
They were scheduled to be here together.
Okay, I didn't know that.
And then JR, of course, you know.
Got it.
He gave me the opportunity to reschedule since JR was going to be here, but I'm not a pussy like him. So.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Thank God. Someone's not right. And I hope just you enjoyed it and you had a good time.
I know he can kill me with his pinky.
and he'll tell a joke while he's doing it, too.
Oh, yeah. Right.
This is how Louisiana boys kill with
a southern drawl.
Well, you can always reach us through our DMs on Instagram and Facebook. You can always email us.
Make sure all the dick DMs go to Zohan, though.
Yeah. That's right.
They keep me motivated.
He keeps a collection of them. we're still running our... hopefully when this podcast airs, we're still running our challenge coin. So you can pick up a challenge coin. You can pick up a T-shirt.
Yep.
We'll have those available. The proceeds from that, after covering our costs, will go to the Wounded Blue, which is an organization that helps with this exact thing, where you can go there and you can get the help you're going to need. Just like Mighty Oaks, if you can't reach out to them, reach out to the Wounded Blue. They're going to help you when you can't go to your own department, or when you can't go to the powers that be for one reason or another, because we have yet to change the culture. And hopefully one day we won't need foundations like the Mighty Oaks or the Wounded Blue, but right now we do. So let's support them and let's help them. Our fundraiser right now is one way to do that. And you can always reach us. You can always come on the show if you have a story you want to share, or if you're just listening and you're a fan. The best way for us to keep this going and for us to keep giving you new episodes is for you guys to like, comment, subscribe. Just so you know, the way the algorithms work on Apple Podcasts or Google Play or Stitcher, the more comments, the more likes, the more subscribers, the more you interact with us, the more they take notice that we are being listened to, and then we will appear in the, you know, suggested for you to other people who are like-minded, who maybe need this. So just think of it this way. By liking and subscribing and commenting, you could end up pushing us up into somebody's radar that wouldn't have necessarily heard us. They'll hear this. They'll reach out, get the help they need, and you'll actually, help them get well. So,
perfect.
Helping us grow and helping us, you know, get this message out there really helps. So, until our next time, come home with your shield or on it.